for you to join us at 656-9900 as we will have a national champion in college basketball tonight. It's Gonzaga versus Baylor, 9:20 tip. We have the women's champion crowned as Stanford beat Arizona. Arizona with just an incredible upset performance of UConn on Friday night, where Arizona led throughout and UConn was a huge favorite going in. I think 14 to 15 points on Friday night. So UConn, which obviously has had a ton of success, hasn't gotten back to winning a national title in several years, but it was an all Pac-12 affair. Stanford got the win. First time since 1992, Stanford has won a national title with a program that's been terrific and a head coach that's won a ton. So good for Stanford to win the title. Stanford knocked off South Carolina on Friday in the Final Four.
And doing it in pretty impressive fashion, really, for both teams. Arizona playing with a chip on its shoulder after that Final Four promo didn't feature the Lady Wildcats, so they came out, made a statement against UConn. They were not expected to really compete with Stanford in the final and ended up having a chance to win it there at the end. So Stanford getting its first championship in nearly three decades and Arizona making its first national title game in school history.
So we have that out of the weekend. Major League Baseball opening up this past weekend, so that's underway. Tennessee baseball with a nice weekend coming back. Kind of, they had to fight for those wins on Saturday and Sunday, but they got them. So another series win in the SEC for Tennessee. You have to feel good about that. Catching up on what has gone on today in the sports world. Yeah, you have to check in every few hours. We're up to 22 lawsuits now filed against Deshaun Watson. That's a story that continues to get worse for him day by day. I don't know how this is going to ultimately play out, but now 22 lawsuits, and also word coming out that the Houston Police Department is checking into what has happened here with Deshaun Watson with all these allegations.
Yeah, so this situation continues to progress. Now the police are involved. It was kind of odd at first. I remember the reaction after the first one or two came out and thinking this is, that it's baseless. There isn't a whole lot here to go off on. And then when the numbers start to really pile up, you kind of start hearing those comments go away. So I'm more just curious to see how this whole thing plays out, because I don't know what the ramifications could be for Deshaun Watson if this comes out to reflect negatively on him. I'm curious what this means for him in terms of playing football in 2021, because I don't know how significant the consequences could be if this turns out to be true.
Yeah, well, let's see if charges end up being filed with the Houston Police Department investigating. That's a possibility now. There was another massage therapist who is uninvolved to this point in the current lawsuits speaking to Sports Illustrated about her experience treating Watson in the fall of 2019. She described it as sexually inappropriate and unlike anything she'd experienced with other clients. Quote, the one thing I keep thinking about is he's about to get traded to another place. He would have a whole new community of massage therapists to target. More than anything, the fact that he's denying all the allegations makes it more of a reason for us to use our voice and say what we have to say. And I said on the show last week, I thought it was actually odd when Deshaun had his attorney present, 18 different therapists that came to Deshaun's defense? And I started to add the numbers up. I was like, why does this elite quarterback with all this money have so many different massage therapists? I actually thought that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look good for him at all. And now let's see what happens with the Houston Police Department investigating, as now again we are up to 22 lawsuits filed against Houston Texans star quarterback Deshaun Watson. Well, right now the Texans, from a football standpoint, of trying to figure out what's his future with us. Can we move him? NFL teams have to be wondering what this means for him as well.
Yeah, because before this all came out, there was a lot of thoughts toward Deshaun Watson about him being a victim in all this with the Texans, the way that they mismanaged the organization, got rid of some key players, the DeAndre Hopkins trade. And you've got the clip of he and JJ Watt walking off the field with Watt saying, we wasted one of your years. And now all this comes out and it's just, obviously, it doesn't change anything from an on-field football standpoint, but the way that it's going to be handled moving forward could be drastically different. And, you've got the relationship between the Texans and Deshaun Watson, and then you've got Deshaun Watson with all this off-the-field stuff. There's just a lot of things that have to be uncovered and figured out before Watson and the Texans can really move forward.
Yeah, and he has to be available to be on the field for the Texans or anybody else. So a story that really has just... it's taken off here in the last 3 weeks when it was first brought to light that there was a lawsuit filed. That was on March 16th, and here we are now talking about 22 lawsuits against Deshaun Watson. So that's a story out there. And then baseball over the weekend. Shohei Ohtani, one, I hope he's able to stay healthy, because you want to talk about fun to watch with his ability to pitch and be a terrific hitter. He homered last night while also pitching for the Angels against the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, went yard, starting pitcher, batting in the number two spot. Doesn't happen very often, but Ohtani goes deep. Had, what, seven strikeouts in less than five innings of work. Took a cleat on the ankle, and so was, you know, came out and said that he was fine. So saw his first start get cut short, but hopefully that's nothing too serious, and he's able to keep up putting on performances like this, because I think that'd be great, especially for the Angels organization. You know, an organization that's kind of gotten some, I think, some just unfortunate publicity just with the fact that you have one of the best players in the league in Mike Trout, and you haven't been able to make that big splash across Major League Baseball that you had hoped. Well, now you've got two really solid icons that can give you a lot of good publicity. It's just, can you finally start winning games consistently to really be in that conversation with the Dodgers, be the AL addition, and then bring more positive baseball back to Southern California? I think that'd be really important. So I want to see it happen, because I think it would be great for the sport.
Yeah, he went 4 2/3 last night. He had seven strikeouts, five walks, one earned run in the game, and they won against the Chicago White Sox. So Shohei Ohtani, you know, they play for the Angels out there in California. You have Mike Trout on the team, and Rendon, who they signed after the Nationals won the World Series. So they've got some star power. Now you have Shohei Ohtani. Maybe that will result in more attention on the team, but they have to win as well. If that happens, then I think they'll get more attention. So baseball coming out of the weekend, the Nationals should be good to go tomorrow after having to cancel this past weekend against the Mets. The Mets will open up tonight against the Phillies, the 3-0 Phillies, after they swept the Atlanta Braves. As you mentioned 2 hours ago, the Braves used to score a lot of runs, but they did not this past weekend. So good start to the season for the 3-0 Phillies atop the NL East.
Now we're three games in, so let's not overreact too much. But yeah, Phillies off to a really good start. Zach Wheeler, really good stuff on Saturday to help them get that win in game number two. And that continued throughout the weekend. And especially after Pablo Sandoval had that game-tying home run in game one, Phillies went on to win that game in 10. So let's see if the Braves can pick it back up. You don't want to get off to too bad of a start, but again, three games in, so a long way to go.
Right. If you look at the divisions now, it'll be a reminder that, yes, it is just April 5th. Atop the AL East is the 3-0 Baltimore Orioles. Atop the AL Central, the Detroit Tigers. The Astros on top of their division as expected. Phillies in first place. Two of the teams in the division haven't even played yet. The Reds and Cubs are tied atop the NL Central, with the Cardinals at the bottom. And then the Dodgers and Padres appropriately leading the way in the NL West. We will come back here on Sports 180. Our pop-up fact will add a little bit more context into how rare it is we are getting to see Gonzaga versus Baylor tonight. Maybe it means we'll get a classic. We'll see. We'll tell you about it coming up next here on Sports 180-656-9900. If you would like to join us on 99.1, the Sports Animal, at 656-9900. The national title game will be tonight. We got a classic on Saturday with UCLA and Gonzaga. I did not see that happening with UCLA, and I know they had been playing well in terms of getting there, but they had not played like that, especially offensively. But they had to have a shot against the Zags. And you know, Matthew McConaughey, who I'm a big fan of, I do subscribe to his either theory or belief that we should not use the word unbelievable, because unbelievable would mean that you can't believe what you just saw happen, but it happened, so you have to believe it. That would be close, though, on Saturday. The way that UCLA played, the way they kept fighting back, and then the big-time plays and the moments, and it finishing on a shot in front of the half-court line that's banked in by Jalen Suggs. I agree with McConaughey that we shouldn't use the word unbelievable, but that's as close to seeing something where we have to believe it to us also asking, wait a minute, did that really just happen? It was incredible on Saturday night.
Yeah, and when you consider how much UCLA tried to rely on its offense from the mid-range and was still able to keep pace with Gonzaga, a team that is well-known for being able to cut and drive to the basket and get easy buckets and has a postman in Drew Timmy who can fight off double teams and score through contact consistently. The fact that UCLA was settling for jump shots and not really able to score in the paint a whole lot and was still able to compete in a high-scoring game with one of the best offensive teams in the country, I think goes to show just how unlikely it was that we ended up with the result that we did.
So we get Gonzaga and Baylor tonight, the top two teams in the country all season long, top two seeds going in, and there's some context to what we are about to see tonight, how rare it is what we're about to see. Let's hit today's pop-up fact.
It's time for today's Sports 180 pop-up fact of the day. A quick look at a did-you-know factoid.
So pretty much all season long, number one and number two. Well, we get the AP preseason number one versus number two. When you go back to the preseason poll, it began in 1962. This is only the fifth time that we will see preseason number one and number two in the championship game against one another. It happened in 2001 with Duke against Arizona, in 1999 with UConn against Duke. Duke beat Arizona, by the way. UConn beat Duke. In 1965, UCLA defeated Michigan. And in 1962, Cincinnati defeated Ohio State. The preseason number two won all four matchups. We should point that out there, Joel Silverberg. So does that influence your thought on this one, seeing preseason number two win all four of the previous matchups against preseason number one?
It doesn't so much influence my thought because I'm already going into it thinking that Baylor's more than capable of winning this game. I don't really know who's going to win. I guess I'm going to pick the Zags. I don't know if I would bet the house on it because I think you've got two really capable teams. But that is interesting, the fact that the number two team has won all four of the previous matchups. We'll see if Gonzaga can buck the trend tonight.
Something about being the underdog when you believe, yeah, we're just as good. And to be clear, Gonzaga was preseason number one, Baylor preseason number two. So it's only the fifth time since they began the poll back in 1962 that one versus two at the start of the season will face off in the championship game. And in this case, it's Gonzaga, still the number one team in the country, unbeaten. And then add in this, Baylor noted that going into this game, Monday, so tonight's game, will be just the second time that two teams that were ranked in the top three all season long will meet for the national championship. So in most cases, you see teams drop back, of course. But the only other time was 1962, when Cincinnati beat Ohio State 71-59, where you had two teams ranked in the top three all season long. So at some point, one of these teams is supposed to drop off. It did not happen this year. Baylor, you mentioned earlier, could be unbeaten right now. There's no way to know. But if they didn't have that COVID break of 3 weeks where they came back and they're rusty and had to play their way back in, but they look like pre-COVID Baylor. But it's only the second time since 1962 when two teams that were ranked in the top three all season long will play for the title.
Yeah, and it didn't really take Baylor that long to start playing at a high level again. It came out of the pause and had a rally from a 17-point deficit to a winless Iowa State team, which went 2-21 and fired its coach this season. But then it bounced back and had a really nice performance and a win over West Virginia on the road, which might have been the best game of the regular season that we saw this year. And then they lost to Kansas, which Kansas was playing well at the end of the season, and then lost to ended up losing to Oklahoma State in the Big 12 tournament. And that was an Oklahoma State team that I thought played really well at the end of the season going into the tournament, and then obviously had a nice tournament run before losing to Texas. So it's not like Baylor lost to bad teams, but once we got into the first week of the tournament, I think Baylor really started to get its footing out from under it again and started to show, hey, this is the level that we can play at. But it accelerated its pace to an all new high when it just whipped up on Houston on Saturday night.
So number one versus number two, close to all season long, two teams in the top three all season long. Maybe that means we get a good one. I hope we get a good one tonight. Baylor against Gonzaga. That is today's pop-up fact. It is presented by Burton McKinnish Law, offices in Maryville, Sevierville, Western North Carolina, and Southeastern Kentucky. Family law and divorce, criminal defense, DUI, Social Security, and personal injury. All people are equal before the law. A good attorney is what makes the difference. Trust Burton McKinnish Law. Visit burtonmckinnish.com. And it's funny having this conversation. You would think with everything we just laid out, two of the top three teams all season long, preseason number one versus number two, you would think that leads to a Duke versus Kentucky, a Kansas versus North Carolina type matchup. Instead, it's Gonzaga versus Baylor for the national title. I'll be curious to see what the interest level is, because the numbers say this is one of your great all-time matchups. I'll be curious to see if people react that way. And Donnie did say, sent us a message on Twitter, at Sports180, with the 9:20 start, you can let me know who wins in the morning, because that's way too late. So that could be a factor, at least for people on the East Coast.
Yeah, I think there's potential for that, especially for people that maybe see the names and don't anticipate it being as great of a final. Even if it's a close game, does it really go down in history like this? But I think with everything that you have on the line with Gonzaga, the story behind Baylor with the job that Scott Drew has done there, But you are talking about one program that's never won neither team has won a national championship ever. Neither coach has ever won a national championship. But you've also got two programs that Gonzaga's only been in this spot once before. Baylor hasn't been here in over 70 years. So it's just not the two programs that you're used to seeing at this stage of the college basketball season.
Yeah, so I think there's buzz for the game, and UCLA helped with that, even in losing effort by challenging Gonzaga on Saturday. But Gonzaga versus Baylor, not exactly your two blue bloods, but one of them will be crowned a national title winner tonight. And by the way, Gonzaga, we're used to Gonzaga being really good, and Baylor's become more of a household name in basketball thanks to what Scott Drew has done. We'll come back with 30 minutes of Sports 180 remaining, more Tennessee football to cover as well, with Sports Talk taking over at 3 o'clock. Right now, let's hit a midday Sports Minute on 99.1, the Sports Animal. Tennessee football spring practice, as Vols are a week and a half, almost 2 weeks in to spring practice, less than 3 weeks to go until the spring game. And you know, a lot of the conversation during the spring now, Joel, I'd say, is going to revolve around transfers, some recruiting, and then actual football on the field. There's only so much you see anyway, so more of it's just reports about what comes out. But like today, Georgia received news that Tyke Smith is transferring from West Virginia. Was, I believe, a third-team All-American by the AP, so that's a nice pickup for Georgia, which I'm sure Tennessee fans are thrilled to hear, with Georgia picking up another big-time talent. But, I mean, that's a lot of it. By the time we get to the end of the spring, depending on what Tennessee decides to do with its number of scholarships for this year, Tennessee's probably going to be trying to bring in a couple of players to help fill some depth, maybe on both sides of the ball. Linebacker has to be a position they're looking at, considering the void that appears to be there. But that's going to be a big part of it. Basketball is getting more attention, but that's because football will go through a big cycle, I'd say, at the end of the fall semester, so that December, early January range, and then probably again at the end of the spring semester after maybe some players go through spring practice and decide, do I want to stay or do I want to go somewhere this summer?
And I think you're right. I think especially a position like linebacker, Tennessee's going to want to get not just bodies, but experienced bodies at that, guys that are ready to handle the position physically and mentally, that have had significant playing time at the college level there before. So I think you're going to see, we've had a number of guests on who have all kind of made the comment that this college basketball offseason is going to be a little bit different in terms of the number of guys going to different places. And even in the Final Four, we saw transfer players make a big impact with really just about every Final Four team for all their runs. There's a transfer from another D1 school that played a significant role in that team getting as far as they did. But I also think for Tennessee football, especially when you have depth in certain issues, you're going to see guys go from one school to another across the offseason. And then I think by the time we get to the end of this fall, depending on what happens and what happens with the transfer rule, then I think you're going to see more guys on the move, not just quarterbacks.
Yeah, I'm also seeing there is a Board of Trustees meeting in 30 minutes at North Carolina, potentially involving conversation around the head coaching spot. What do you think there? UNC's open with Roy Williams retiring last week.
I was not expecting that. I thought his comments were a little bit interesting because he was talking about how he doesn't like the way, like the direction that the game's heading in. It wasn't so much about him being done with coaching, but I was a little surprised to see that after, you know, they kind of had some, it wasn't really the bounce back year they were hoping for, but they were such a disaster in the 2019-2020 season. They came back and made the tournament this year. I guess I wasn't aware that that was on the radar for him to consider calling it a career after this past season.
Yeah, I don't remember anybody saying it was going to happen. I guess anytime somebody who's in his 70s decides I'm going to retire, it shouldn't be that. I mean, at some point he was probably going to hang it up, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. So you never know with some of these coaches with blue blood programs, though. I mean, Coach K, Nick Saban at Alabama.
This isn't Bob football. Stoops walking away,
right? So it isn't that surprising. The timing of it, I guess it took everybody by surprise in the sense that you didn't really feel like it was on the horizon. But I guess with some of these coaches that are consistently successful, you never really know when it's going to come to an end. But that's a big time job opening. And there's been some big ones. Chris Beard going from Texas Tech to Texas. You've got Lon Kruger retiring from Oklahoma. And then the Sooners go and hire Porter Moser from Loyola Chicago. Chaka Smart.
You like that hire?
I do. I felt that if Porter Moser didn't leave Loyola Chicago this year, then he was never going to. And I feel like Oklahoma is a big enough program that he can get the resources to win big there. But I also feel like it's not to the level of Texas, where the expectations are going to be insanely high from day one. They're going to be high for Moser, and he's going to be expected to deliver. He's going to be in a somewhat similar situation that Shaka Smart was, going from a Final Four team with BCU to going to coach for Texas. And then you've got Shaka Smart going from Texas to Marquette, which I think was a smart move for him. So I do like the hire from Oklahoma. I'm curious to see what ends up happening with Indiana, what happens with North Carolina. I'm curious because we've got some big time openings coming up this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, UNC is huge. Now, if they promote from within, it's Hubert Davis, that will either lessen or, I guess, still have a big impact on what happens with the sport. With the transfer process, I think we can overreact to what it means, because transferring has already kind of started up. But obviously, if there's a one-time transfer allowance, then players are going to consider it more often. I can see how it's a turnoff to some people. I think both things can be true. You can be in favor of more opportunity for players and still think, well, for the game, that's not the best, because you're not going to have as much players staying and developing. But that kind of went out the window with players jumping to the NBA at an earlier age as well. So the sport's already been affected by that before we get to this transfer process.
I remember hearing this complaint maybe 3 or 4 years ago a little more frequently, that there were some fans that didn't like what college basketball was in the modern era now because of the one and done rule. You've got guys that are there for a year, then they leave. You don't really get the chance to really know the player that's playing for your favorite team, which made Tennessee a few years ago really likable, because you had Grant Williams, Jordan Bone, Admiral Schofield, Kyle Alexander. You had a bunch of guys that were here for 3 or 4 years before they moved on. And it was a team that obviously had a lot of positive personalities, a coach that everybody liked, and Rick Barnes. So that was a little bit different. But in an era where there's a lot of guys that are there for one season and then they're gone, I think that was a turnoff for some fans. And so I don't hear that complaint as much anymore, but I think that is part of it, where you're trying to get behind a program, but who's really behind the program when players are on the move as frequently as they are in college basketball?
Well, part of it has to depend on the results too.
Yeah.
You like the one and done guys if they come in and win more than if they come in and don't win.
Which is why it's probably not an issue in places like Kentucky, where they can win at a high level and churn out top classes each and every year. So you're right. I think that's the case. And the same thing with Duke. Obviously, they had bad seasons this year, but historically, those programs have had much more success than they've had failure.
Right. But for someone who comes back and says, yeah, I don't like that, I want to see players stay for 2 to 3, maybe 4 years. I mean, that's the history of college basketball. The issue there is just, well, that's probably not going to happen, especially for the major programs. Like the idea of Michael Jordan went to North Carolina for 3 years. That is not happening today.
No.
So it's just, if you don't like it, I totally understand why. But I also, I think we just have to recognize that it's changed. And, also there's the flip side. How much are people talking about Johnny Juzang and what he just did for UCLA in this tournament run? Well, he was a transfer. He was a guy that went to Kentucky, left for a year, went to UCLA. So different stories can evolve based on how things have changed as well. So that'll be part of it. I mean, from an interest standpoint, there's probably going to be more off-season college basketball chatter now because of the transfer market. You'll be talking about guys bouncing. Where does Walker Kessler go leaving North Carolina? Where does a highly touted player from one school go to? And then once he makes a decision, how will that affect that school once he arrives?
Well, and you never know. The conversation's going to be curious for a lot of people, because you never know which transfers are going to make the biggest impact. I think when you look at the Final Four,
a lot of it can be overrated. Olivier Sarr going from Wake Forest to Kentucky was supposed to be a big deal, and it was not.
No, it didn't help them really much at all. And I think you look at the Final Four teams. Baylor has Jonathan Chamwa-Chachua over from UNLV. Gonzaga has Andrew Nembhard transferring from Florida, and he could have gone really just about anywhere and been a starter on just about any team in the country, and he ends up coming off the bench for them. But he's been a really important piece of what they've done. Houston, Quentin Grimes, getting him from Kansas, and he becomes their best player along with Marcus Sasser. And then with UCLA, you mentioned it, Juzang going from Kentucky, widely because of the pandemic, so he can go back home, but ends up having just a monster year and a monster tournament. I mean, 4 of the 6 games that UCLA played, he scored 20 points or more. He was really big, not just in this game against Gonzaga, but throughout UCLA's entire Final Four run, he was the focal point of it.
And then there's the, comes back to, do you win or lose? Does a guy transfer to your school or away from your school? UCLA was happy to take Johnny Juzang. Kentucky probably not happy to lose him.
Yeah.
Right? So do you get him or do you lose him? That's a big deal. If you get Cade Mays, you love the transfer process. If you lose Henry To'oto, Not quite as much. And maybe that's not the best example because Tennessee's just in an offseason, one, with a coaching change, and two, with a bunch of players leaving. So right now, Tennessee's not gaining as much as it's losing in the transfer process. But who knows, maybe a year from now, Tennessee will have more guys coming in to help as opposed to guys jumping ship.
Yeah, and I think that's one facet of it, too, for Tennessee basketball fans, is the transfers that Tennessee had come in didn't give you that sort of production that you were hoping for. Victor Bailey Jr., EJ Anasicki, Juroš Plavšić, there were some transfers that didn't give you the numbers that you thought, hey, they had the potential to do this. And at times, I thought Victor Bailey Jr. gave you that, but for the most part, the transfer portal hasn't given Tennessee the production that it's been looking for on the receiving end.
We'll come back for our final segment of Sports 180. Sports Talk's going to take over at 3 o'clock. We'll hit the Power Poll coming up. The top five winners and top three losers out of the weekend. And then Sports Talk will begin at 3, right here on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Their top recruit, who was supposed to be playing for them this year, after he had signed, ended up not enrolling in school and went to play in the G League. And Mick Cronin had voiced his complaint about that last week, about how he felt that his recruit had basically been just actively recruited by the G League after he had already signed to play at UCLA. Yeah. And so you're talking about three major hits there and then Johnny Juzang dealing with ankle issues for most of the season. You're talking about some major hurdles, and Gary Parrish of CBS Sports pointed this out, that just for UCLA to get to the tournament in the first four, you kind of would have looked at that and said, yeah, Mick Cronin did a pretty good job just to hold that whole thing together. He turned it into a Final Four team after this team started off the season getting blown out by San Diego State. After having high expectations going in, they lose to San Diego State. They need overtime to beat Pepperdine. And you're thinking, man, UCLA is just getting off to another slow start. And keep in mind, his first season, they lost to Cal State Fullerton. So Mick Cronin's done some pretty good things in 2 years, considering what he's walked into, the expectations that he has with a program like that, and some of the adversity that he's had to face in each of his first 2 years down in Westwood.
Yeah, three of UCLA's tournament games, NCAA tournament games, were in overtime, including that Michigan State first four game. So incredible. Here's another reason that I didn't think UCLA had a chance against Gonzaga, and again, was proven wrong there. In the Sweet 16, UCLA shot 39% against Alabama. In the Elite Eight, UCLA shot 39% against Alabama. Well, that wasn't going to cut it against Gonzaga. That's where I was correct. But then UCLA shot 58% against Gonzaga. So against the best team in the country, of course, they had one of their best offensive performances of the season.
Quality shot, which is something really cool that kind of analyzes the quality of shots that each team takes during the course of a basketball game, and then kind of analyzes where a game should finish. It had shown that based on the quality of shots that Gonzaga and UCLA took, Gonzaga would have won that outcome 98% of the time by an average of 22 points. UCLA outscored its projected total by 14 points just to stay in that basketball game. And based on its entire run, it would have lost half the games it played in the tournament based on the quality of shots it took. So its expected total was to lose three out of the six tournament games it played, and it went to the Final Four and almost knocked off the number one overall seed.
I told you, no way UCLA beats Gonzaga on Saturday night, and boy, was I correct. Let's hit today's Power Poll. Joining us is John Wilkerson, getting ready for Sports Talk in just a few minutes. John, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well. Very excited coming out of a busy sports weekend, title game tonight, and looking forward to Sports Talk in just a few minutes. Would you like to lead us off with today's Power Poll with the top five winners and top three losers?
Why, sure. Honorable mention, over the weekend I will go with Tennessee softball. Took two out of three against Kentucky, the higher-ranked team, and they won Friday, then took it on the chin on Saturday, but bounced back to get the finale, so congratulations to Ralph and Karen Weekly's team. Tennessee baseball comes in at number five, jumping up into the top five. Depending on what survey you look at, Tennessee has won three straight SEC series to open the season for the first time since 2001. Houston Astros come in at number four, first to 4-0. I'm going to go Arizona women because they knocked off Connecticut. Number two, Stanford, won the national championship. And number one, Gonzaga and Baylor share that spot because one of them is going to cut down nets tonight as national champs. As far as my losers over the weekend, we all know, and I mean we all know who and what Skip Bayless is. So I'm calling out the people who react to Skip Bayless. That's yes. What he wants more than anything. So when everybody went nuts because he said, how can you call a great game such a lucky shot? That's Skip Bayless being the big honking loser he is. And then everybody, of course, tried to tear into him. Number two, Golden State Warriors lost 7 of 8. Huh? What? Can you? Number one, UConn, because goodness gracious, they were supposed to win it all. Granted, Stanford was indeed the overall number one seed when the bracket was made, but I think everybody was pointing to UConn, and they came up just a bit short. Don't you hate to see it?
I know a lot of people locally did, for sure. Joel Silverberg, your top five winners, top three losers out of the weekend.
Top five winners. Number five, Shohei Ohtani. You go long as a batter, and then you strike out 7 in less than 5 innings on the mound. A great performance from him. I really hope that he stays healthy so that we can see more of this throughout the course of the season. Number four, Baylor, getting to their first national championship game since 1948. Shout out to Bill Henderson. First Final Four appearance since 1950. Number three, Jordan Spieth, getting the win in his home state, breaks a 4-year drought of PGA Tour victories. One of the youngest players over the last 40 years to reach 12 PGA Tour wins. Number two, Stanford women's basketball, first national championship since 1992. Number one, Jalen Suggs. He said after the game, "I've always wanted to have a moment where I could jump on the table like Kobe or D Wade." He got to have that moment. That is an all-time shot, and he earned it. So I don't know if Gonzaga is going to win this title, but the weekend was definitely Jalen Suggs for the taking. Number three, losers. Number three, Warriors, losing 7 of 8. This just been really bad. And they've had some injury issues, but half of these losses have been by double digits. What happened against the Raptors on Friday night is illegal in most countries. Number two, UConn. Not only do you miss out on the opportunity, you never led Arizona in the semifinal, but finger pointing, some player blaming by Gino Auriemma. He's won too much for that. Number one is Houston. I said it all week. Look, Marcus Sasser is the key to Houston having success offensively. Well, Sasser showed up for the Final Four. The rest of his team didn't. Houston got blown out by Baylor on Saturday night.
Alrighty, top five winners for me. I have the Phillies and Orioles, as well as the Tigers. Phillies and Orioles sweeping over the weekend, and to be 3-0 at the start of the season in their division, I'm sure they love that, and the Tigers in first place as well. I have Baylor at number four. I have Jalen Suggs, number three. I would vault him to number one if I knew that they were going to win tonight, but I don't know yet. So retroactively tomorrow, I might move Jalen Suggs up to number one. Pending tonight's result, I have Jordan Spieth number two, and Stanford's women's basketball team winning the title. They get number one in my power poll as well. Losers, John, we're here on the show together. Braves and Red Sox, not exactly the start that either team was looking for.
Yeah, woof. At least your number team was one on the road.
That's right, you know. Okay, so it's just the Red Sox on my losers category of the power poll. John sold me. John sold me. Number two, Paul Pierce, IG Live, probably wasn't the best idea over the weekend. And then I have UConn, the number one loser over the weekend on the women's basketball side. The power poll, top five winners, top three losers coming out of the weekend. John, what's coming up next on Sports Talk?
Well, I get to spend the afternoon and looking forward to it at one of our favorite places as a station to hang out, and that's Roosters here on North Shore in the heart of Rocky Hill. It's the Michelob Ultra Golf Giveaway, better than a birdie. Folks can come down, get the keyword that you text in. We'll have three finalists from today's registration, so we'll be at Roosters this afternoon. No Jerry Punch today. He's going to join us later in the week. We will have Mike DeCourcy, senior basketball writer for the Sporting News. That'll be at 3:35. We'll also have Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com at 5:05. Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello at 5:35. We'll have comments from Tennessee football coaches and players. All that and more today on Sports Talk at Roosters in Rocky Hill.
A big afternoon ahead. John, we appreciate the time as always and look forward to it.
Guys, have a great night. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you, John. And Sports 180 will be back tomorrow at 12 o'clock. For Joel Silverberg, Chandler Emerson, I'm Josh Ward. Thanks for hanging out with us today on 99.1, the Sports 180.